Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Austin Peterson here. Today is Thursday, October the 25th. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Freedom Report podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the cannabis reforms going on around the entire United States. Missouri specifically has a few medical cannabis proposals that are going to be on our November 6th ballots. And I'll actually be hosting a forum in Kansas City tonight at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. UMKC. So we'll have some representatives from the different proposals, the ballot measures. The people who are behind them will be there. I'll be introducing them, and we'll have a lively discussion about the upcoming marijuana reform here in Missouri. I thought it would be a good idea to talk about what's going to happen here at the national level, specifically from the White House, because it was recently announced, and this is something that I have been hearing actually for months, that the White House is actually expected to unveil federal cannabis reform very soon, according to a GOP lawmaker. The White House is planning on tackling cannabis reform after the midterm elections, according to Representative Dana Rohrabacher of California, Republican. Rohrabacher tells Fox Business that the Trump administration has made a solid commitment, quote, to fix marijuana regulation. He says, I've been talking to people inside the White House who know, and inside the president's entourage. I've talked to them at length. I've been reassured that the president intends on keeping his campaign promise. Rohrabacher says that the president has spoken in support of legalizing medical marijuana on the federal level and leaving the question of recreational use up to the states. Rohrabacher continued, I would expect after the election we will sit down and start hammering out something that is specific and real, he said. The California congressman who's up for re-election is battling to hold on to a seat that national Democrats have identified as part of their strategy to win the House majority this midterm election. Well, good luck to you. Rohrabacher is facing Democrat Harley Ruda. Real Clear Politics listed the seat that he held 5 years ago as a toss-up, and the polling average has both candidates at a dead heat with 48% of voter support. Isn't it absolutely amazing, though, that the people who are the head of pushing marijuana reform are Republicans? You used to think that it was the Democrats who were for civil liberties and who were for freedom or doing things like ending the war on drugs, and yet here we have the spearhead of this movement in Congress. Dana Rohrabacher has been kind of a liberty-leaning congressman. I've known about him for years. He's a real swell guy, and he's been pushing the medical marijuana issue for many, many years. But he's also an expert on foreign policy. I actually remember attending a forum with him at the Cato Institute once. We were discussing national defense. I think I brought up the letters of mark and reprisal to him, and he didn't seem super keen on it. Neither did I. Think there were other two congressmen who were there as well. They were not super happy with the discussion about letters of mark and reprisal. And, you know, if you don't know what that is, you know, maybe you should look that up. But but I'm really interested about what the White House is going to do. I mean, we're talking about having federal cannabis reform after the midterm elections. Obviously, they'll be more flexible. I mean, wouldn't it be unbelievable if Democrats were to make gains in the House if we had a Republican Senate and a Democrat House? Would the Democratic House block cannabis reform because they don't want to give President Trump a victory? Yeah, probably. I mean, freaking A, that's ridiculous. But I mean, that's probably what you're going to get because politics isn't about policy. It's about power to these people. And, you know, I happen to believe that we should be ending the war on drugs entirely, but I'll take these as good first steps. But let's talk about what's going to happen around the country. I have an article here from NBC News called Marijuana Midterms, Why Legal Weed Advocates Think All the Pieces Are Coming Together This Year. Four states have marijuana measures on the ballot in November, and a Democratic Congress could make it easier for more states to relax drug laws. See, I don't see that at all, NBC News. I mean, that's kind of an editorial there. They're saying a Democratic Congress could make it easier for more states, but if giving President Trump a win means that they've got to vote against it, I'm guessing they'd vote against it. This is by Alex Seitzwald. As polls show record support for marijuana legalization, advocates say that midterm elections could mark the point of no return for a movement that has been gathering steam for years. The train has left the station, said Rep. Earl Blumenauer, Democrat from Oregon, a leading marijuana reform advocate in Congress. I see all the pieces coming together. It's the same arc we saw two generations ago with the prohibitions of alcohol. Voters in four states will weigh in on ballot initiatives to legalize weed for recreational or medical use next month. While voters everywhere will consider giving more power to Democrats who have increasingly campaigned on marijuana legalization and are likely to advance legislation on the issue if they win back power in Congress and state capitals. Oh, really? Because here in Missouri, the Hemp Reform Act was pushed by a Republican. Well, you can tell that this is, you know, NBC News. You can tell that this is lefty news. It's just been 6 years since Colorado and Washington became the first states in the country to legalize marijuana. But in that short time span, seven other states and the District of Columbia have followed. 30 states have legalized medical cannabis. The entire country of Canada legalized the drug last week. Politically, the issue has gone from a risible sideshow to a mainstream plank with implications for racial justice and billions of dollars in tax revenue. Now, they brought up racial justice there, and you know, you may sort of blanch at that if you're a conservative, maybe not if you're a libertarian, simply because one of the key arguments that libertarians have made in the war on drugs is that it's not prosecuted uniformly, meaning that white people often use drugs at the same rates or even higher rates than minorities. And yet the minorities are the ones who bear the brunt on the criminal justice reform issue. So in this paragraph, they're talking about it being a sideshow issue, and it certainly was for a number of years. As a matter of fact, one of the jokes that Republicans or people or Democrats would make about libertarians is that they would say that libertarians are just Republicans who smoke weed. It's not a sideshow anymore. Rep. Blumenauer is talking about how they can read the polls, right? So, for example, Claire McCaskill here in Missouri, the U.S. Senate incumbent who's going being challenged by Attorney General Josh Hawley, she came out in support of medical marijuana, I believe, just a year ago. It was very, very recent. That was something that I had planned to hit her on should I have been campaigning against her. That she was a just sort of a Johnny come lately or a Claire come lately on this issue. And as a matter of fact, Attorney General Josh Hawley himself has actually been soft on the medical marijuana issue. I won't say he's supporting it, those ballot measures, but I will say he has been soft on the issue. And part of the reason I think that might be actually the psychology behind that is because if the White House, and certainly Mr. Hawley's a big Donald Trump supporter, then I think if the White House is going to be supporting some form of cannabis reform at the federal level, then it's very likely that, you know, the president and his team, you know, gave Hawley the okay to support that issue if that's going to be coming from top down. So listen to this. Two out of three Americans, about 66%, now support the legalization of marijuana, according to a new Gallup survey, including a majority of Republicans, and for the first time, majority of voters over the age of 55. Not surprisingly, support is strongest among Democrats, they say, 75%, and young adults between the ages of 18 and 34%. I would be really curious to see how they cooked out those numbers from this Gallup survey. But opponents say advocates are ignoring the backlash that rapid legalization has created, including from some surprising corners, like the Detroit chapter of the NAACP, which is set to announce Tuesday its opposition to a ballot measure that would legalize marijuana in Michigan, the most significant of this year's referendums. Now, I have not read the specific argument that the Detroit chapter of the NAACP made about this ballot measure. It's highly possible that they have a very principled opposition to this. But from just what I've seen, of course, blacks are very socially conservative, so it's quite possible that Christian blacks are in opposition to the measure. You know, blacks being majority Christians in the United States, at least. So it's very possible that that could be the reason why this Detroit chapter of the NAACP did this. Let's take a look at it. We'll research it and we'll get back to it. Michigan already has a robust medical marijuana industry, but voters could decide to fully legalize the drug for recreational use on November 6th, A recent survey commissioned by the Detroit Free Press found 55% of voters supported the measure, compared to 41% who opposed it. Well, my friend Steffi and Mitch are going to be happy about that. Meanwhile, North Dakota voters will also have a chance to legalize recreational marijuana in one of the most conservative states in the country, 2 years after 64% of voters approved its medical use during the 2016 election. Advocates are less hopeful about their prospects this year, though a pro-legalization group released a poll this weekend claiming a narrow 51% of likely voters approve the measure. Utah, a deep red state with some of the strictest alcohol rules in the country, no kidding, is considering a medical marijuana initiative, which polls suggest is favored to even though most of the state's political and religious leaders oppose it. No shit. At the same time, Missouri voters will consider three separate and competing medical marijuana ballot initiatives. The situation has frustrated advocates and could confuse voters, especially because it's unclear what will happen if they approve more than one next month. Well, let me ask Austin Peterson, make it very clear for you right now. If one of these measures gets more votes, then one of them will supersede the other two, unless only one of the ballot proposals in Missouri is a constitutional amendment. So if it's a constitutional amendment, then the constitutional amendment passes. So I'm voting for a couple of the ballot measures, but if you want to find out how I'm voting, and I'll be voting in the morning, so when you're listening to this podcast, I'll be on my way to my to file my absentee ballot, and I will have made my decision about which ones I will be voting for and against. And if you want to find out how I voted, you're going to have to come to my forum tonight at UMKC, which you can find on my Facebook page, The Events. Just click on the Events tab, and you'll be able to follow me so you can come out tonight, or maybe we'll do a little live stream if you're lucky. But you should come. Hang out with me in person. Be my friend. That feeling when... anyways. Meanwhile, Vermont's state legislature earlier this year legalized cannabis, though not for commercial sale. And New York and New Jersey could be next, as lawmakers in both states are actively considering the issue. Tom Angel said, an advocate and journalist who founded the news site Marijuana Moment, says, "The tipping point probably passed one or two election cycles ago. It keeps becoming more and more apparent it will be impossible for prohibitionists to reverse our gains. And as a result, more mainstream politicians are getting on board. Progressive Democrats like Florida gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum and Texas Senate candidate Rep. Beto O'Rourke of Texas have adopted marijuana legalization as a central plank of their campaigns by tying the issue to criminal justice reform, citing the disproportionate number of African Americans arrested for the drug, even though usage is common among whites." Yes, as Austin said earlier, duh, I don't need you to tell me, NBC News, I know that you are fake news. Well, I read them anyway. I read everybody's fake news. And speaking of fake news, this is actually not fake news, but it's really funny. I'm laughing at ex-Speaker of the House John Boehner, who's out there pitching people in the marijuana industry. You know, he's all in on cannabis. I'm reading this from Fox News. John Boehner is well known for his fondness for red wine and cigarettes, but in his new career since retiring as House Speaker, the veteran Ohio GOP lawmaker has added marijuana, or at least the industry, to his list of vices. I think this is hilarious because he says that when it comes to legalization across 50 states, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Listen, if the former Speaker of the House from our own generation is out there lobbying for it and saying it's going to happen, it probably is going to happen. So, you know, if you can get invested in the cannabis industry, probably not a bad idea, either on the, we'll follow all local laws and federal laws, by the way. I'm not giving you any advice or telling you to do anything illegal, because God knows they would use anything they can to deplatform a conservative or a libertarian if they spoke out of turn. But if John Boehner is out there pushing this, it's very likely it's going to pass. So probably not a bad idea to invest if it's legal where you live. And God knows it's almost impossible to tell sometimes. But John Boehner, he's on the advisory of this multi-state marijuana company. It's called Acreage Holdings. Even though in 2011 he said he was unalterably opposed to legalizing the drug, because now he sees the dollar signs. He sees the green, yo. And anyways, he says that his views changed after he spoke to a Navy SEAL who used cannabis to treat the migraines he suffered from after being injured in combat. John Boehner said, "He started using cannabis and the migraines disappeared. That's when I realized I was wrong." Well, you know what? Even if he's doing it for the wrong purposes, he's still doing the right thing. So, you know, let's pat him on the head. When politicians do the right thing, we should pat him on the head, even if they do the right thing for the wrong reasons. Blah, I hate it, but probably a good idea for us to advance. So that's what I have to say about marijuana. Lots of things coming up in the ballots. And I'm going to switch tax here. I'm going to change tax. And I'm actually going to read to you guys from one of my favorite books. I've got some quotes here. It's actually just a quote book. And I won't just go into detail too much about these quotes, other than perhaps to give a little bit of explanation, maybe do a little vocab for you. So, you know, like sometimes this author uses some vocab words that even I have to look up. And I'm a voracious reader. But this book is specifically called The Quotable Hitchens, From Alcohol to Zionism. It's the very best of Christopher Hitchens, and it's got a foreword by one of his best friends, Martin Amis. It's a great book because it gets you interested in lots of different ideas. It's a great way to sort of delve into one of my favorite authors, Christopher Hitchens, who commented on everything. He went through such an enormous ideological change in his life, and he's just a sort of British intellectual who passed away a few years ago. He's, I believe, lung cancer. But he was someone who had a profound impact on my thinking. And even though, you know, he was like what you'd call an atheist, a militant atheist, right? Someone who was, he called himself an anti-theist, right? He thinks that religion should be divorced from the public square, should be abolished. I don't think through force of arms, necessarily. He was talking about it. He just thinks that it's something that harms humanity. That's why a lot of conservatives don't like Christopher Hitchens. But I like to read people, even if I disagree with him, and God knows, I think I disagree with Christopher Hitchens maybe 60, 75% of the time even. But that's also because he's offered so many opinions. And I just, gets me thinking. Do you ever have someone like that, that you read that has a great body of work, a large body of work, and they get you to think? Like, I feel more educated after I read it, because even though I don't agree with some of his conclusions, I feel like he asks the right questions. And I feel like he, in some sense, makes some very important moral points on issues that you are not familiar with hearing, from someone who is non-religious. And this issue, of course, being abortion. Now, of course, this book goes from A to Z, Alcohol to Zionism, but it looks as if it starts with abortion, because it's actually in alphabetical order. But there's a description in the foreword about why they chose Alcohol to Zionism, probably because it sold more books. But I wanted to read to you some of his quotes about abortion. Remember, this is and not just an atheist. This man is an anti-theist. But listen to what he says about abortion. He says, "I have always been convinced that the term unborn child is a genuine description of material reality. Obviously, the fetus is alive, so that disputation about whether or not it counts as life is casuistry. The same applies, from a materialist point of view, to the question of whether or not this life is human. What other kind could it be? As for dependent, this has never struck me as a very radical criticism of any agglomeration of human cells in whatever state. Children are dependent, too." Very interesting. Right. So in a way, he has, perhaps my arguments for, you know, what is a human life, right, the defense of life, liberty, and property, and my sort of understanding of the ethics of abortion is sort of divined from this concept here, where he says, you know, we have to, you're not disputing that the fetus is alive, because of course it is. By nature, it is alive. And then, of course, you looking at it from a materialist perspective, you know, the question is whether or not the life is a human. He says, well, what else could it be, right? Sometimes I make a joke, well, it's not a giraffe. Right, but this is a materialist, like a secularist, someone who's making this argument in favor of life. Let's see. This one is, well, that's a little too spicy, I think, for this podcast today, but there's some other good ones here. Da-da-da, listen to this. This is a good one. This is a criticism of the pro-life movement, even though he agrees with them. He says, "The whole case for extending protection to the unborn and to expressing a bias in favor of life has been wrecked by those who use unborn children, as well as born ones, as mere manipulable objects of their doctrine." Very good. The whole case for extending protection is being ruined by those who are using them as objects of their doctrine. I think I'm going to let you think that one over on your own. And what he meant by that. Listen to this. Just as no human being of average moral capacity could be indifferent to the sight of a woman being kicked in the stomach, so nobody could fail to be far more outraged if the woman in question were pregnant. Embryology confirms morality. Very interesting. Yes, it's just it just strikes me as so logical and so true from this materialist perspective of being pro-life. I just happened to find this. It just makes me think. I'd love to read more to you, but I realize I'm supposed to be entertaining you. I'm not supposed to be getting caught up in reading. But there were some other things in this book not related to abortion. There were a couple of other topics I thought were interesting I wanted to share with you, and I'll share many more topics in my Freedom Report podcast to you. Are you listening? I hope you're enjoying. He talks about liberals and humor. He says, a liberal joke at present is no laughing matter. And you know what? He actually, Christopher Hitchens, had some nice things to say about libertarianism, and he actually had some not very nice things to say about libertarianism. And in this, I think I don't want to go through all the descriptions to understand the back one, this one, but here is something that he says that is a criticism of libertarianism. And I think it's something, you know, don't get triggered, libertarians, but just consider this, right? He says, libertarianism often feels like an optional philosophy for citizens in societies or cultures that are already developed or prosperous or stable, he says. Well, he wrote this back in 2001. When he was, I believe, being interviewed by Reason magazine. Now, listen to this. He did say in the exact same year, in Letters to a Young Contrarian, he said, I have not abandoned all the tenets of the left, but I have learned a good deal from the libertarian critique of this worldview. And along with this has come a respect for those who upheld that critique when almost all the reigning assumptions were statist. So what he's saying here is that he's learned a lot from libertarians about and has a respect for the critique for people who upheld the assumptions, like the beliefs, the moral beliefs or the policy beliefs of the day. They held libertarianism even when all the assumptions that were in power were statist. Here he says, so much more, but I should probably cut this off because it is getting late because I record these the night before. And I, you know what, guys, I'm having a blast doing these Freedom Report podcasts. I'm sorry that this week I couldn't give them to you on a time like you wanted. But frankly, it has been a wild ride. As many of you know, I'm actually producing an election night show in Columbia, Missouri. So I've been getting all kinds of exciting bookings going on, getting some big name guests, some talent. We're going to have a great studio. And you can learn more about that by following my Facebook page. You want to watch it, you'll be able to watch it live on election night. But if you like the Freedom Report podcast and you want to get more good streaming content like this, more good podcasts, more good libertarian journalism, you can support me at Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/AP for Liberty. If you're already a supporter, thank you so much for supporting. The goodies and prizes and headshots and books and fun stuff go out this week. So it's going to be really fun. I'll take pictures and post them on my Instagram account, which, speaking of, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at AP for Liberty. And don't forget, the Patreon is patreon.com/AP for Liberty. You can find me pretty much anywhere at AP for Liberty, except on Twitch, which is NYC Producer 1776. Thanks so much, guys. Have a wonderful day.